Welcome back to Unity FM 93.5. You're listening into Science with Sid, and we're talking about inventions today. And before the break, we had Anas in the studio. He's still with us, and we're going to continue talking about some of the key inventions that we've come across and how we think they're going to be influencing the future. So I think just before the break, we mentioned a few things. Is there anything else that you can think of at the top of your head that really wows you at the moment?
Well, one thing is this type of transportation system that is basically, it's a long tube that would go from A to B with pods inside. And the way it works is that the air behind the pods would be compressed, and then the air in front is sucked out by machine, which forces the pod.
It's like a vacuum.
Yeah, vacuum, which forces the pod along the tube at faster than the speed of sound.
Okay, so let's, for our listeners, let's talk about a couple of key ideas in there. So a vacuum, how would we describe what a vacuum is?
So it's a space that contains nothing inside it.
Yeah, so it's something without any gas particles in, which is really a strange concept. If you're in a vacuum, you wouldn't be able to hear anyone or speak, or the sound, there wouldn't be any sound waves, because sound waves require particles in the air. So space, if you get further out in space, is a vacuum. You can't hear anything in space, which is a really strange concept. But light travels through space. Why?
Well, light travels through space because it's not just made up of a wave. It's also a particle. So it's actually a thing. Like, it doesn't need other particles to travel through.
Yeah, the two different types of waves. So we've got transverse waves and we've got longitudinal waves. Okay, so transverse waves can travel through a vacuum. Longitudinal waves are the ones which go backwards and forwards. So they're the particle vibrations. So longitudinal waves, like sound, ultrasound is a sound wave, will require sound waves. Transverse is stuff like x-rays, anything on the electromagnetic spectrum. So light waves, x-rays, infrared radiation, microwaves, radio waves. They don't need particles. So through space, we can have them traveling. So light from the sun. Do you know what electromagnetic waves the sun gives off?
It gives ultraviolet, infrared, the visible waves that we can see. That's all I know, I think.
Did you actually know it gives off everything from the electromagnetic spectrum?
Okay.
It gives off x-rays.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
as
I
well.
Remember, 'cause I've seen
x-rays, microwaves, radio waves. But what happens is when they reach the Earth's atmosphere, the Earth's atmosphere stops a lot of those rays from coming in. So actually, if we didn't have the atmosphere that we've got around planet Earth, a lot of us would die from cancer because of the x-rays coming from space. So we've got an amazing atmosphere around us, which protects us from a lot of that stuff.
I know an interesting fact is that every year you actually have a 0.025% chance, I believe, something like that. It might be, an extra zero in there, or slightly more, I guess, chance of developing cancer. So after 4,000 years, you've got 100% chance of developing cancer.
So every year that chance increases by a little bit.
Yeah, and that's because the human body can absorb a maximum amount of radiation, which is about 5 to 6 sievets. I don't know how you pronounce that, of radiation before it dies. And we get obviously a lot less than that from background radiation.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea. I've not heard that one before. Yeah. All of this kind of data relies on the future being extrapolated in the same way. So it's the idea that everything's going to continue in the same way. We don't know what's going to change. It might be that our bodies will adapt and we can actually take more radio. I don't know. There's lots of factors and variables in this. And a lot of things that scientists predict are based on a very small sample of here and now and the last couple of hundred of years. And then they kind of extrapolate, like they do with how the universe started. They've kind of gone backwards and kind of gone, well, if everything's expanding, it should have come from a single point. So a lot of that relies on just using the imagination a bit.
Yeah.
But we were talking about vacuum. So that's what a vacuum is. A vacuum is something that doesn't have any particles in. The other thing we mentioned is the speed of sound. How fast is the speed of sound? I've forgotten the figure at the top of my head. The 300 and something meters per second.
Yeah, something like 700 something miles per hour. Yeah, 765, I think, miles
per hour.
It's
very fast. So speed of sound, this basically means is something is moving so fast that you can't... it basically travels before you can hear it. It's gone past you before you can actually hear it. And this leads nicely onto the land speed record for the fastest land speed a vehicle. Do you know what that is?
No, I don't know the actual speed. I do know it's called the Bloodhound.
So it's Bloodhound. Bloodhound was a vehicle that was designed to be the fastest one that was on land. They did do a lot of testing before they tried it out, and I think it did break the record. And they had a stretch of land in a desert somewhere. But the idea was, if the guy that was driving it wasn't able to control it properly, like the blood would rush down to his head or to his feet or something really quickly, or the other way around, I can't remember, and to the point where he could pass out, so he'd be too late to slam the brakes if he did not time it properly. So it was like a split second because it's going so fast. But I remember the students in the school that I was teaching at the time, we did a lot of project work around that. It was really fascinating. But yeah, that goes so fast that it goes past you before you can actually hear it. So you're saying this device that they're making that transports people from one place to another will be going at the speed of sound, so you won't be able to hear it. But also, how are they going to do that? Are you going to be in a pod so it's circular? So you're just going to be like tumbling the whole way through?
You're not going to be tumbling. So it's more oval shaped, so it keeps you the right way up.
Okay, so I'm assuming then the oval's slightly squished so it can't move too much in the tube.
And then it's kind of like a train, so it can take multiple passengers. Then boom, they start it, they compress the air behind, suck out the air in front, go... So if you're coming,
scary.
Birmingham to London, take you a couple minutes. A speed of sound, I think, how far is it from Birmingham to London? It's like 120
miles.
120 miles, at the speed of sound... So I think that's something like 20 minutes. Yeah.
I can't do that calculation in my head. But yeah, it would be pretty quick. But it's actually quite scary, because if you're travelling that fast, you can't stop.
Yeah. So deceleration is a bit of a problem, because, you know, if you decelerate too fast, you get a lot of force acting on you. And if it goes more than... about 3, 4, 5 G, it would be very uncomfortable, and most people can't really take that. So
it's the whole idea of that blood moving to your head, whichever way around it is, and you'll pass out. So yeah, that's an interesting concept.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think it's interesting to see how much inventions are influencing our life and how they're changing it. So in terms of the types of inventions that we're having, most of it's to do with convenience, how we're kind of more efficient, hopefully. I don't know how, but then we kind of end up spending a lot of time on our smartphones, and then that efficiency kind of goes down the drain. But it's interesting to see that there are other things which are to do with safety as well. So I've got a really high-tech alarm system installed in our house at the moment. And it's really interesting, because the traditional alarm systems, do you know how they work?
Yeah, so a couple of different ones. I think one I know is that you have an infrared beam, and then if somebody passes that beam, the beam's interrupted. A sensor on the other side can't sense the beam anymore, and it turns the alarm on.
And they're normally controlled by a password that you have to type in when you enter the property and when you leave the property. So it's that, oh, I have to remember that password, and all the other passwords that you have to remember in your life. It's just another thing to remember. So this alarm system that I've got installed in our house at home works with a tag. So basically you include that tag on your keyring, and then as you're entering you just swipe it, and as you swipe it, it detects that you're home, it'll disarm the property, and then it'll also log who has come home as well, so every member of the family can have a different tag. And that tag can have a particular name, and they're all different color coded. So you could check who's been in and who's been out. And the amazing thing is, it's linked to a 24-hour security system. And that security system then allows for you to call them if you're in an emergency, but for them to actually know that an alarm's been triggered. So then they will contact you to check whether it's a false alarm, or there's internal cameras they can check. And then if they think that there's someone in the house, they will automatically call the police and they'll have the footage already available. So it's meant to be a quicker turnaround and response system, because there were alarm systems in the past which were directly linked to the police. But the issue with that was there were lots of false alarms that were going through. But this way, it's kind of there's someone else in the middle to kind of stop that false alarms before they actually reach the police. So it's really interesting in how they work. So I think safety will improve over time when we have more and more better inventions. Is there anything else that you want to add to that?
No.
Okay, so we're going to move on to talk about a bit about your homeschooling, because you're homeschooled at the moment, how you're finding science and where you plan to go in the future, because I think you want to go into a science career, which is brilliant to hear.
Yeah, I would like to go into engineering.
How long have you been homeschooled?
I was homeschooled for a year in year five, and then I went back to school for year six, and then I went back out and I've been homeschooled until now. I'm in year 10.
And you're studying GCSEs at the moment, aren't you?
Yeah.
So which subjects are you doing? It's not biology, it's chemistry and physics. And which lab days have you attended?
I've attended two chemistry lab days and one physics lab
day. Which one did you enjoy the most?
Physics.
Yeah, you're a physics lover.
Yeah.
And was that the one that Dr. Slusky came in?
Yeah, it was about nitrogen. Very cool.
Do you want to mention any of the experiments to the listeners?
So there's the one where you put a flower into a cup of liquid nitrogen and it just goes really hard and brittle and you can smash it.
And Dr. Slusky was on the show a couple of weeks ago, so did you listen to that show?
No.
You need to tune in. So you can catch up on the shows on sciencewithsid.co.uk. I've put all the previous shows up there. Are you enjoying physics more so than chemistry then?
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I think physics is like, it just explains physical stuff, obviously, the mechanics of how things work. And then, you know, it gives you cars and everything. But then chemistry, it's a lot more complex and you've got to memorize a lot of stuff, a lot of chemical reactions and blah, blah, blah. But it is really important because, like I said, in cars, you know, the development of chemistry was very important because the petrol that your car runs on, obviously you have to understand how to separate hydrocarbons like petrol from crude oil and things like that. So really these different levels of science, physics, chemistry, biology all really tie in to each other, so you can't really have one without the other. But still, my favourite is physics.
Yeah, and this is what Dr. Slusky was saying, that how even though he will never admit that he's a chemist, a lot of what he was doing in his PhD involved chemistry, because the link between all the science, there's a big link between all of them, and they do cross-link. So it's interesting that you mentioned that as well, that there is a link between them.
Yeah.
So you want to go on to do engineering?
Yeah, I want to go on to do engineering, preferably mechanical or electrical engineering. So that's what I'll try to study for.
What kind of mechanical? Are we talking about automotive cars or...?
Well, I really like... it's kind of... Yeah, that would be nice, but also civil engineering, like bridges and things like that.
Because you do a lot of... You like taking things apart and making things and putting things together. So any inventions that you've made or tried or that have worked...
I haven't really invented anything, but I've tried to make a couple of different things, like electric cars and stuff. I mean, that's what I like doing as a hobby, more not necessarily as a job. But basically, I've done an electric car. It was pretty cool. I did it with my little brother and his friend.
Like a big enough car for someone to sit in?
No. I mean, like
a toy car.
Yeah, toy car.
Okay.
So
I thought it was like a there. A child toy car where they can sit in it. That would be pretty amazing.
So basically, got a piece of cardboard to use as the base, and then I got, you know what? I can't remember exactly what I did now, but I got an axle and wheel, and then I had the motor connected to one wheel by lots of sellotape.
Component.
Yeah, and then I had the other wheels were just connected, but I think it was something like straw, and then the wheels were actually made out of bottle caps. So you put the motor directly into the bottle cap. You have to make a hole and push it in.
So it's interesting that you use a lot of recycled stuff.
Yeah, I don't have any real materials or anything. I just got, like I said, I bought a couple motors, and then arranged it, got a switch, put the wires in and everything. Then
could you have made a switch yourself as well?
Could have.
How?
Well, basically just cutting the wires that connect it in half, and then having maybe a bit of a sticky thing, like blue tack, and then just go.
Yes, we used to do an electricity workshop where all the switches the students used to make, and we used to use, you know, those paper fasteners?
Oh, yeah.
The ones which have the little two bits that fold back at the back. So you'd put those in, you'd tie the wire around both of them, then you'd have a paper clip across one, and the paper clip as you'd... If it covered both of the paper fasteners, then it'd complete the circuit. You could open it and close it. It sounds really complex on air, but we'll try and put a photo.
I've done something like that with Lego. So Lego, now they have Lego motors and things like that, but I wanted to make one myself because it costs a bit of money. So I got one of my motors, because mostly I get my motors from remote control cars, take them apart, get the motor out.
What's the point of that? Because you're wasting.
Well,
you can get
no.
motors for a couple of pounds. Like,
yeah, I know that now, but before, when I was little, and they break so easily anyway.
True.
So I just got the motor out.
I thought you broke a really well-working car anyway. No. So you're breaking, okay, so the car's already broken. Okay. So if there's anything that's broken out there, just bring it to an S and he'll make a new invention out of it.
So then you can, with a bit of sellotape, you can connect it to a piece of Lego Technic, which is a different type of Lego that works with holes and pins instead of the usual Lego that you might have seen. And then it's a special type of switch, so when you go one way, the motor will spin one way, and when you push it the other way, the motor will spin the other way. You got to use paper clips and wire and stuff. I don't remember exactly how to do it yet now, but yeah. So that was cool.
Brilliant. So where do you want to head from GCSEs? So once you've got your GCSEs, what do you want to do for A-level?
Well, if I could do maths, definitely, and physics.
You're gonna do
not chemistry. English.
Mechanical engineering has a lot of chemistry in it, though, because it's an understanding of materials that are being used, not just the mechanics side of it.
Yeah, but I don't know. Also, I like to do maybe English because there used to be an A level in creative writing, and I'm really into creative writing, like writing stories and stuff. Like I said,
sci-fi.
Yeah, I write sci-fi. Fantasy adventure. So you might just have like Lord of the Rings where you got dwarves, then you might have sci-fi like The Maze Runner. It's a really good book that I've read where it's all about like in the future, dystopian future, opposite of utopian, and they got their minds wiped, they end up in a maze, they have to work out how to get out, and then my books where you've got a dwarf with a machine gun or something. Yeah.
But in your books, do you create a lot of new things that could possibly be invented in the future? Do you have a lot of new inventions in your books?
No, I don't actually.
But if you think about how movies and programs have developed over time, there was stuff... I remember when I was a kid, I used to watch Knight Rider. And this is probably before your time.
Yeah.
But within Knight Rider, his car, or he used to call it Kit, had... basically a sat nav, which now is so common, but back then it just did not exist. So he had a sat nav system where he could it would give all the roads where he needed to go, but he also had a two-way video control so he could talk to his colleagues back at the office. And you can do that on your phone now. You can have a video conferencing conversation, or you can, what is it called, FaceTime and all that, or WhatsApp video. So a lot of these ideas once were in movies and were all sci-fi and it was all unreal, and now they're starting to become real because people have grown up with that idea in their head and they've gone, oh, could we actually make that real? So it'd be interesting if you could incorporate some new ideas and inventions into your book, which one day might actually become a reality.
Yeah, maybe I'll put the drive-through supermarket in there or something.
but a bit too late for that one now.
Yeah, but well, this kind of sci-fi is like things that are theoretically possible but are way out of reach, like alternate dimensions, which are very on fundamental theoretical mathematical quantum physical level could exist, but that kind of thing. So not necessarily inventions or anything like that.
But there might be something that is invented that is able to take us through those different dimensions in the future. So it's just thinking about that at the box a bit. I was thinking about what I find is that a lot of inventions that we think of already exist. Like I was thinking the other day, I keep losing my car in the car park when I'm parked in a supermarket car park, and I was thinking it'd be so cool if there was a device that could track where I've parked it, and there's actually something that exists out there that can do that. But yeah, so besides going into engineering and being interested in physics, what else do you do? You said you talked about writing.
Yeah, so I try to write stories. I wrote one for the MHES newsletter, the Muslim Home Education Support Group. I haven't finished that one actually. I got about six-eighths of the way through. But now I'm trying to write a book that I definitely want to finish called The Book of Worlds.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah, so I've got 5,000 words. I want to get it up to maybe like 50,000 something.
So how are you organising your time to make sure it gets done? Because it's sometimes very difficult to motivate yourself.
Yeah, so I'm not really organising my time that well. But what I do is there's lots of blogs where people have like written stories and stuff, and I read those, and then I have to try to like convince myself that this is definitely a good idea, because once you commit to writing 50,000 words, if it's a rubbish idea, you're wasting your time. So
so are you doing a set amount of writing each day? Is that how you're doing
it? Not each day, but in a sitting I try to do 500 words.
Okay.
And then try to do as many sittings as possible per week.
So when will this book be ready then?
It could be ready somewhere like half a year's time.
Okay.
So, yeah, and then I'll try to self-publish it on Amazon.
Brilliant. So maybe once you're ready with the book, you can lend me a copy. I'll do a review for you.
Yeah.
And we can you can come back into the studio and we can discuss that. So before we go, we've got a couple of minutes left. Anas has been working hard writing a little rap for us on the topic that we've been doing today. So his pen's been working while he's been talking as well. Do you want to share that with the listeners?
Yeah, okay. So it's really small. It's what's good. I've been writing for about 5 minutes. So, okay. So just imagine some beatboxing, whatever behind it. Maybe the bit.
I could have. I'd say I'd try, but I don't think I'd be really good at the beatboxing bit.
Yeah, no, come on.
No, I don't think
just
I can
go.
Do it.
Just go. Go on. It's a simple one. Go. Can you make that sound?
I don't think I can do it. I think you should just do the rap on it.
Okay. Inventions, electric motor, 1800s, revolution. Don't like walking, got a solution. Michael Faraday impacted you. Don't think about inventions, make one too.
That sounds really good. So basically, the moral of the story is you need to go out there and invent something so we can have a better life in the future. And there's so much at the moment that's going on, but there's so much still yet to discover and yet to invent. So I guess it's going out there and giving it a shot. So I think we've reached the end of our show. Is there anything that you want to say before we go? Just encourage the youth.
If you're somebody who likes making little things, electric things and stuff, then keep doing that. And also buy some proper materials, like try to get your parents to buy you proper things, because otherwise it just doesn't work.
Or you can just take things apart and things that are broken, not new things, take things apart and put them together and see how they work, because I think that's the best way to learn. Seeing something that works and being able to take it apart and then redo it is a big learning curve. Okay, so you've been listening into 93.5 Unity FM with Science with Sid. Sid is S-Y-D, and we've been talking about all things inventions, and there's quite a few different things that we have talked about today. We will share the videos on Facebook, so please check out our Facebook, Science with Sid, and there's also a blog, www.sciencewithsid.co.uk. So all the shows, all the previous shows are on there as well, so you can check them out. And any links and anything that we talk about gets posted on there as well. So please do go listen back and have a look at some of these cool videos that we'll be putting up, because some of these are really amazing. I especially like Muso. Which one was your favourite one, Ines?
That would probably be the tyre.
Actually, the tyre.
Yeah.
I thought you might say that, because that links into so many other things that could come out of that. Okay, so until next time. Next time we will have a live show. So we'll see you next week on our live show. 93.5 Unity FM, Science with Sid. See you next week.